Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. It's so great to have you here this afternoon. Well, spring is kind of in the air, sort of in the air here in the Midwest. I think our high is officially still in the 30s, but we're hoping that spring is coming. The reason that I know spring is in the air is because I just received my first wedding invitation today, actually, about 15 minutes ago, my first wedding invitation. And that means there will be more to come. Well, here in the U.S., the wedding industry comprises almost the wedding industry is huge. Let's just say the wedding industry is huge today in the U.S., and planning for a wedding is not exactly what people think it is. They may be planning for that big day, but there's some behind-the-scenes things that you're supposed to do as well, like maybe talk about what it means to be married. It's a novel concept, but a lot of people do struggle with that after they tie the knot. So what we're going to talk about today is, what should we be doing before we get married? With over half of marriages in the U.S. ending in divorce, maybe we'd like to cut that percentage down a little bit. Well, did you know that for couples who experience any sort of premarital counseling or even read a book together before they get married, that number can be cut down by as much as 31%. So if you knew that you could cut down your odds of getting divorced by nearly 31%, wouldn't you take that chance to do a little bit of premarital counseling? Well, my guest for today says absolutely. In fact, he's so committed to that idea that he's written a book called Getting Ready for Marriage, A Practical Roadmap for Your Journey Together. Let me tell you a little bit about him, and then we'll get him on the show. Dr. Jim Burns is a renowned youth and family expert. He's an acclaimed author and speaker and the founder of Homeward Center for Youth and Family. He has over 1.5 million resources in print and a radio broadcast heard in over 800 stations daily. He and his wife and his three daughters live in Southern California. Welcome, Jim.
Joe, great to be with you again. And we are sending you that spring weather because I'm in Southern California right now and it's 75 and... You know, it's nice. So it's coming.
Yes, I left Southern California about 2 weeks ago. And sometimes when I get home, it is spring. But this time, unfortunately, it is not happening here in the Midwest. So thank you for sending it our way.
We'll send it your way. It'll come soon.
That would be wonderful. So you co-authored this book with your friend and your colleague, Doug Fields. What is it that you learned about your experience as a counselor or with couples that you've talked to or even as a husband that determined that couples really do need to have a little bit of premarital counseling or some engaged conversations before they become engaged?
Well, Joe, it was exactly what you said at the beginning. You know, we started seeing incredible reports, both Christian and secular, saying that there's, you know, a 31% better chance that people will stay married if they have good premarital education. So much so that even on the secular side, states like Oklahoma, Florida, even your great state, are lowering the marriage application fee, or in some states, they're actually just, if you'll go through it, you don't have to do a marriage application fee. So what that was saying was, we're desperate, the studies aren't good, but there's some, in the middle of it, there's really good studies that say if you get good premarital education, way too many people, and especially this is exactly the time of the year, like you got the wedding announcement today, and you'll get more, we will too. But a lot of times we're planning for this huge party, but we don't put any energy into the, you know, important side of marriage. So when couples take some time to do it, it's much better. It's building a foundation that'll help them greatly in the years to come. And it's amazing when you think about 31%. Oh my gosh! And you mentioned 50%, and actually for some of the people who do this, it's a lot better. But think about this. You know, you and I invite your listeners. Hey, we're going on a plane. And but before, you know, you come on the plane with us, we'll, you know, we're flying to Florida. But before we do, we need to let you know 50% of there's a 50% chance there'll be a crash. Well, nobody's going to get on the plane. Mm-hmm. But yet we do that every day with our marriages, and then we don't get the help we need. So that motivated us. I mean, we were, and Doug and I had done hundreds of marriages. Both of us have that background. We, I mean, Doug was a teaching pastor and youth ministry person for 18 years at Saddleback Church here in Southern California. He was actually in my youth group years ago, so we're good friends. And I have done, you know, hundreds of weddings, and so we realized that this was critical to helping them move from you know, just planning a big party to getting the help they need to prepare for their important marriage.
Well, I don't know how many listeners we have today who are listening, but I know that there's two people who are listening very intently to this conversation. One is my producer who's working the board today. His name is Aaron. So he's pushing all the buttons to make sure that you sound the way that you do. Say hi, Aaron.
Hello, Jim. How's it going?
So
Aaron, you've got a radio voice.
You think so?
When Joe takes a vacation, you come on.
Oh, gosh.
So Aaron's
engaged.
Not yet,
not yet.
Aaron's getting married in October. And then also the person who's answering all the phone calls today, Carissa, is also getting married in 35 days.
35 days, and who's counting?
I know.
I already talked to Carissa. She also has a very kind, gentle, wonderful voice, too.
She is kind and
35
gentle.
35 days.
Yes, so they are listening intently to what you're saying today, and I'm sure other people are too. But those statistics are staggering. And why wouldn't you do something that could offer such a dramatic, positive effect on your relationship? Like just even having conversation. You say that even just reading a book and going through some very simple conversations, starters, can help when it comes to getting married. Why is that?
Well, you know, it's actually not Doug's and my statistic. It's a statistic we took from, first of all, the state of Oklahoma, which has done amazing studies on it, and then, you know, other research. And we're not academic research people. We're just reading their stuff. But what they're saying is, you know, they, over the years, as they've looked at people who are engaged, or right in the place that Carissa, Aaron, and other listeners would be in, or their kids, it's staggering. When you start looking at this, they went, why did these people make it? Why did these people not make it? Part of it was, you know, the premarital education. Now, again, I don't think there's magic in the words that a couple gets from, you know, their pastor, or frankly, some people would get from a priest or from marriage mentors or whoever. I don't think it's magic in the words as much as the willingness to walk through the issues of, you know, how are we going to deal with our in-laws? What are we going to do about finances? How do we communicate? And the hard part is, when you're, and we say this in our book, it's like, and this is going to be a terrible touch on both Chris and Aaron, but when you're engaged, it's like you're on drugs, okay? Because your mind is doing amazing things. And, you know, when people come into my office and do premarital, in fact, I have one in about an hour and a half, I'll say, you know, how are you guys doing? Are you guys friends? Do you feel like you're good friends? Oh, we're best friends. And how do you communicate well? We communicate perfectly. Now, 6 months after the marriage, they always say, well, we do communicate well, but here's what our issues are. Now it's real. Hmm. But again, a lot of people aren't willing to, they don't think they need this. And yet when people go through any kind of premarital education, you know, they walk away going, wow, this was outstanding. And Kathy and I have been married for 41 years. So it's, you know, we are like old people, and our premarital counseling was, you know, we love the guy who did it. We love the guy who did our wedding, but he didn't do good premarital counseling, you know. And what that meant was we had to do it afterwards, which was a lot harder. I wish we could have been prepared in dealing with some of these types of issues. So we had to learn it after, and it's just harder after. It's better to do it before.
Do you think that a lot of couples just kind of have this fantasy idea of what it will look like to be married, and so they think that they don't need to talk about these issues, and then all of a sudden, boom, they're in them?
Right, right. No, I think there is a bit of a fantasy. For Kathy and I, Kathy and I were both raised not in Christian homes, and we didn't have good marriage mentors from our family. I mean, I'm not throwing our families under the bus because they're not horrible people, but they just, you know, they weren't going to be our role models. And so we both became Christians at about age 16. We're out of the youth ministry movement. And fascinating enough, we thought because we were Christians and we were both dedicated to doing youth work when we got out of grad school, and we were even doing it, you know, right at the time we were getting married, we went, well, we're going to do fine because A, we're Christian, and B, you know, we seem to be a lot better off than the, you know, family systems that we're from oh, my goodness, our first year was horrible. I mean, I can remember, Joe, we would be driving to the youth group that I was leading, and Kathy was a major part of it. We'd be in a major argument, which we didn't see that coming because neither one of us are arguers. But, our first year was tough. Mm-hmm. We'd be in a major argument, and then I'd get there to the kids and talk about the joy of a Christian family, feeling somewhat hypocritical. But also feeling alone, because I figured that the other people in that church, because we weren't willing to talk about this with anybody, that we were struggling so much, that a lot of those people, you know, had the perfect marriage. They didn't argue like we did. They didn't have communication. We argued over which way to do the toilet paper roll and squeezing the toothpaste. Honestly, it's the illustration everybody gives. Both of those were issues for us. Never saw that coming. And so the point being is that, you know, many times you don't know. So, you know, like today, for example, I'm talking with this couple where they're going to do a kind of a family history experience where they've drawn their, you know, where the grandparents and is there any alcoholism? Is there any divorces? Are there any mental illness? What's their faith values and whatnot? We will have an incredible hour of just talking about their family systems. They will learn something about each other, and they'll also learn kind of what their past is, you know, coming from, because they're bringing all that into it. Just that experience will be, you know, well worth it for this young couple who are great people. I mean, I've been with them now a couple of times, but they're great people, but they need that. And I can tell that there's some stuff from the past that would be very good for them to talk about. Well, that's going to help build a foundation for helping them understand how to draw closer together. A lot of conversations like that, you know, conflict, my heavens. Sometimes people don't have as much conflict when they are engaged or when they're dating. And then when they get married, you know, they do have conflict. Conflict's not bad. Even in the book, Getting Ready for Marriage, we say that the average couple has 326 conflicts in a year. And when I read that to my wife when I was doing the research, she said, "That's all." So, you know, what do you say?
Well, there are big conflicts and there are small conflicts, right?
Sure. Exactly. Exactly.
Conflict
is good. Conflict brings intimacy.
It brings you a little bit closer in the end. Sometimes we forget that.
It does.
Well, I'm talking to Jim Burns today. He's written a great book called Getting Ready for Marriage, A Practical Roadmap for Your Journey Together. We'll talk about some crucial questions that couples should be asking each other before they say, "I do." And a lot of other things as well. What are some areas where maybe you struggled in the beginning of your marriage and you'd like to join in on the conversation? We'd love to hear your questions or comments. You can give us a call at 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. Talking to Jim Burns today about getting ready for marriage. And we'll be right back on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. It's great to have you here today. We're talking about marriage, getting ready for marriage, as a matter of fact, with author Jim Burns. He's co-authored a book with Doug Fields called Getting Ready for Marriage, A Practical Roadmap for Your Journey Together. We've been talking about just the importance of having some conversations around issues that you may end up confronting once you're married and how important that is to establishing a marriage that will last. Jim, what you ask five questions or suggest that couples ask themselves five questions as they're kind of getting ready for marriage. We kind of talked about the first one, which is, are you willing to work at premarital education and how important that is? But the second one, I'd love you to speak to. It says, are you willing to hear from your relational community? Now, sometimes you said we act almost like we're on drugs when we're in love with our partner-to-be, and maybe we don't see clearly why they may not be the person for us. So what does your relational community have to do with that?
Well, I think your relational community has great insight, and that doesn't mean that it has to be, you know, some big negative deal. But if everybody in your relational community, meaning mom, dads, extended family, close friends, are saying, "Gosh, I'm a little worried about this," or, you know, "No offense, but," you know, I think they need to listen to that. And too many times couples have moved through it saying, "Well, I know my parents don't, you know, want me to marry this guy or gal. I know that my friends think, you know, he's kind of a dork, and I know he used to do drugs, but, you know, he's been clean for, you know, 9 days. What happens is typically, Joe, it plays out that the community knows better. And again, you can't. I have three daughters. One is now happily married with our first grandson. We're very excited about that. But with the other two, I mean, I'd love to choose their husbands. That's not going to happen. But if there was somebody who came into it who I thought was just a horrible situation, and everybody else did too, I think it would be important for us to say it. But I also think it would be important for my girls to hear it. They're adults. They can make their own decision. But if the entire relational community is against it, boy, that's a major red flag. And so part of asking those questions, and we'll get into the others, but part of asking those questions is, are there some red flags that you don't see? Back to the illustration of us talking like we're on drugs. You're in love. And it might be puppy love, but, puppy love is real to puppies. Mm. So sometimes they mistake these incredible feelings or incredible infatuation with some of the without facts, and your relational community would be the ones who would give you some of the facts. So, I think you seek it out.
Well, and that kind of leads us into that third question. Are you willing to look honestly at some red flags? What are some red flags that maybe we don't see when we're quote unquote in love with this person that our relational community might be able to point out? What are some things we should look out for?
Yeah. Well, today, one of the red flags, and again, we all are sinners and we all make mistakes and we all, miss the mark and no one is perfect. But today, some of the red flags are actually even different than they used to be. For example, pornography. The average kid will see pornography at age 11. The greatest new users of pornography are boys ages 12 to 17. If pornography has gone unchecked, a pornography addiction has gone unchecked, to me that's a red flag. Can people get help? Yes. Do they need accountability? Sure. Do we need to, tell everyone who's ever seen pornography, since pretty much every male has viewed pornography at one time in their life, especially when they're younger. But if it's gone unchecked, I worry about that, because now people who have porn addiction say, look at the opposite sex as a sex object rather than, I think, an intimate partner. So that and other addictions, for example, if somebody is either a problem drinker or an alcoholic, if there's been abuse, if somehow in their relationship there's been some unfaithfulness to them, then again, those are flags. Those are pretty major red flags. The people very strong different spiritual values. Typically, that doesn't work. Statistics tell you that if you are more spiritually compatible, you're going to do better. If one person is a Christian and the other person isn't, then the odds are greater that you would not do well. One last one, and we could talk about red flags for the whole time. Mm-hmm. In fact, we have a thing where they can ask 50 questions later. But for example, cohabitation is an interesting one, because if couples are living together, and today, even in the Christian world, I guarantee you that the folks we mentioned earlier who are engaged have friends who are Christians who have done this. But there is a much greater chance if you're cohabitating, and this is the science of cohabitation. Scripture does speak to this, obviously, but here's just the science. A greater chance of divorce, a greater chance of less sexual satisfaction in your marriage in the long term, greater chance of adultery in the relationship. And I could go down a list that's actually pretty strong and daunting. Well, that's a red flag. So again, what has happened in our culture is people have moved in together to save money and to do all these things. But the reality of it is that flag is worth having a conversation about. I know a couple who, and I talk about it in the book, I know a couple who, they were living together. They didn't know that there were some scriptural principles there. So we're now moving it to the scriptural principles. And they read those scriptural principles and said, whoa, we need to not do this then. So they separated for like 3 months and actually didn't come together even on a physical intimate relationship. And then they got married. And, today he's an elder in a church that Kathy and I are aware of, and we have a lot of respect for this couple. But part of my respect was they said, whoa, we'll stop going in this direction. In some ways, the word is repent. So, old Christian word, obviously. But they kind of repented, and they didn't – they moved out. Mm. Well, there was financial issues. There's all these other complications. That was a good move on their part.
It seems like there's
those are red flags.
Seems like there's also a prevalent attitude that says, well, we just want to try it out for a little bit and see what happens.
Right.
Do you find that to be true as
You're
well?
You're so right. Oh, I just find that in today's culture, I find that so true. And what's fascinating is even the secular culture where I'm getting those facts, I'm not getting them from Christian facts on it. The secular culture doesn't know what to do with this because, again, they don't want to have morals and values, like through a biblical grid like you and I would have. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's not working. So the fact of let's try it out. A lot of times, and I'm just going to generalize like this like crazy, but a lot of times it'll be the woman who's trying it out thinking it's almost marriage, and the guy's trying it out. It's easier to have a sexual relationship. It's more convenient financially. But you know, there's a reason that they didn't make this long-term, commitment. And so the trying it out sometimes doesn't work because there isn't the long-term commitment. And back to the relational community, nobody is really looking at that as marriage. So, when a couple comes and says, we're living together, but we'd like to buy a house together and eventually we're going to get married, the parents, but we want a loan from the parents, say. Mm-hmm. The parents are going, you guys aren't married. They want that. They want that commitment. And so, I just think there's a lot of flags that go up. Are there people who have lived together? Let's be honest. Are there people who have lived together and, they then got married and, today they're doing great? Yes, there are. But the statistics, again, tell us that they're not. So in premarital counseling or premarital education, we've got to bring up that issue. And that's a tough issue for many, many people who are doing premarital education today because of the fact that in 1974, which is a long time ago, 74% of the people in that age group that's getting married said that they would not live with someone before marriage. Today, 74% say that they would be willing to. Well, that's a huge sociological shift in frankly, a pretty short time.
Mm. There's even a practical component when people ask me that same question. Well, what do you think about us just living together for a while before we get married? I always just love to tell the story. I remember when I had a little conflict with my husband-to-be when he was my boyfriend, and we got in a little fight, and I got in my car, and I drove home. Then I got married to him, and we had a little conflict. And you know what? I could not leave. I could not get in my car and go home. That was my home.
Right.
And so I had, and right. I just remember that thought. He said, don't you dare call your mom or dad because that's what I would do. And I thought, oh my goodness, it's true. I can't pick up the phone and call someone or get in my car and drive home. I've made a commitment now and we need to work this out. And it completely changes the dynamic of that relationship because you've made that commitment and you do need to work it out.
Oh, absolutely. There's a really neat Hebrew word called ahava. And ahava actually is a word that it's one of the words for love. And the Hebrews and the Greeks, Old Testament written in Hebrew, the New Testament written in Greek, they have all these words for love. We just have love. So I love ice cream and I love my wife and I love God. And I can only say the word love because, we don't have it. Well, ahava is not based on emotion, but based on a fact. The illustration I would give is that Kathy and I one time got in a pretty tough fight, and we had to separate, meaning, I went into one room, she went into the other because we were married. And then we finally came back and said, look, we're not going anywhere, so let's work this out. Mm. It's exactly the illustration that you said. That's an ahava love. You go, we're not going anywhere, so we're going to eventually have to figure this out and make it better, and that's what we did. That's what you do when you're married. It's not what you do when you're, dating. And that's a big difference.
More with Jim Burns when we come back. We're talking about getting ready for marriage on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Joe Bender, and I'm talking with Dr. Jim Burns today. He's authored a book called Getting Ready for Marriage, A Practical Roadmap for Your Journey Together. Jim has a lot of experience with both youth ministry and family ministry. He's an author and speaker and the founder of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family. With lots of radio experience yourself, Jim, tell us about your show and what kinds of subjects you talk about there at Azusa.
Well, it's interesting. I love radio, and I just think you do such a good job. And I was not one who even listened to Christian radio. I listened to Pop 40 and news, and my wife listened to Christian radio. Not that Christians sometimes do that. But I was asked by gentleman named Ed Atzinger, who was part of the Salem Communications, would I be willing to go on primetime daily within a 5-week period on most of the major stations or most major areas in America? And, you know, blindly we said, yeah, that's easy. And it was crazy. So I took a crash course in interviewing and, you know, radio, and I loved it. I'm a curious person, so I love, you know, interviewing people and talking with people. And so we did that, and then we have a 1-minute feature that is around the country, and then we have a weekend hour. So it's been a fun ride. I'm actually spending a little bit less time on radio right now because I am spending more time speaking and writing. But I love radio. I meet people wherever I go, and they just say, wow, you know, thank you. What they're doing with you, Joe, they'll you know, you'll meet them and they'll say, thank you so much. And you go, well, gosh, we're influencing folks and we don't even, you know them. And how cool is that? So I see it as one of the blessings of the great blessing of my life that it was never in my wheelhouse. I never went, oh, I want to go do, be on radio. And then I realized the power of it. And, you know, I noticed that, that you guys are having a, you know, kind of a share-a-thon here pretty quickly. And, you know, it's you know, done with people who love God and who support incredible, you know, ministries like what you guys do.
So, well, thank you.
It's a great thing.
And we air your show here on Faith Radio as well. So if you want to hear more from Jim, you can just go to myfaithradio.com. You can click on his show and see when it's aired in your area. So thanks for providing that for us. You share so much wisdom just about families and ministry, just given your many years of youth ministry as well. And we're grateful for it. So thanks, Jim.
My pleasure.
So we talked about a couple of red flags that people might want to just consider. And one of the questions they might want to consider, one of the questions you said it's really important to ask when you're considering committing your life to another person is, are you willing to be brutally honest about your own brokenness? And a lot of people will get married thinking that this is going to fix them, that this is going to, as Jerry Maguire would say, complete them. What's the error in the reasoning there?
Well, you know, a sinner marries another sinner, and then eventually you have sinnerlings, and you know, it doesn't really complete you necessarily. And you've got to be ruthlessly honest about your brokenness. I don't know that I really was all those years back with Kathy, and I'm not sure I was really even in touch with some of the brokenness, both coming from, you know, like I came from an alcoholic home, and I didn't really understand what that all meant. I just, you know, knew, you know, Dad drank a lot, but I wasn't an abusive home per se. But I didn't know how to do communication or relationships. And so I think when a couple is honest about whatever their brokenness is, that brings a lot of healing, and it also gives the other person in a premarital situation an opportunity to either forgive, receive forgiveness, forgive, or give forgiveness, to have a better understanding of why we act the way we act. And when we have that, we become more compatible. And when we become more compatible, I mean, no one is perfectly compatible, but you become compatible partly by, you know, by sharing things like your brokenness. And, you know, in our brokenness, we are more ready, I think, to have a good marriage because we're willing to talk about that. And we're also then not just pointing at the other person. You know, Doug Fields and I do Refreshing Your Marriage conferences all over the country. In fact, our next one's in Chicago, and we'll have thousands of people at these things. And they'll always want to point the finger at their husband or their wife, and I'm saying, wait, there are three fingers pointing back at you when you do that little point thing. So, you know, I can't change Kathy. Kathy really can't change me, but I can change me, and I'm in charge of that. And so when I do that, then that helps my relationship. So to do that, I've got to be, you know, more, like I say, ruthlessly honest about your own brokenness. And part of that means that you admit to God and to your spouse or future spouse, because we're talking about premarriage today, you know, kind of some of the areas that in the past. I mean, I had a couple a while back. She had been this is a horrible story, but she'd been, you know, sexually abused by a stepfather, and they were close to getting married, and she had never told that story to her fiancé because she thought her fiancé would probably break up, when in fact what he did once it came out in this office that I'm sitting in right now was there was an incredible act of love and grace and support and continued support, and it actually caused her to go and get the kind of healing that she needed because she still needed some work on that. Well, she would never have had the ability to connect as deep with her husband now if she had not dealt with this horrible thing that had happened to her. It wasn't her fault. It was the stepfather's fault, but she had not shared it. So in sharing even that kind of brokenness, it brings healing. It brings a closeness. It brings grace. All the things that you know, stir it up and you have a much better relationship.
Mm. Well, and sometimes, like we were talking about earlier, the conflict that you might have in a marriage relationship will actually lead you to a greater intimacy. In fact, you wrote in your book that sometimes to solve a conflict, it's to look at a problem as something we can solve together instead of do this or I have to do this.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit more about that and why conflict, why it's necessary to learn how to work through conflict as a couple.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's good. Even when I'm talking with couples who are getting ready for marriage, if they've never had conflict, I actually worry about it. I try to actually cause some. I'll stir it up. They go, oh, this ought to be fun. But, what I find is that when I'll say to a couple, I'll say, who's the enemy when you're in an argument? And they go, well, she is. Well, he is. They go, no, the enemy is the conflict. And so when you get we talk about a positive conflict dance and a negative conflict dance in this book. But in the positive conflict dance, you take the conflict and you work on the conflict without having to try to be defensive and without putting the other person down. And you become much more of what we would call the we factor. When you do that, that grows your intimacy. That grows you toward what we call authentic oneness. But if you're just, always putting the other person down, then that's not a good thing. Now, one of the things that we've learned kind of after this book, and we talk about it a lot right now in the things that we're working on a book right now called The First Few Years of Marriage. And one of the great things about conflict is that it's not a hereditary it's a learned trait. So you can learn how to be better at dealing with conflict. I'm an extrovert. My wife's an introvert. Never going to change. That's just – I married an introvert. She married an extrovert. That's how it is.
Introverts are great, aren't
DNA.
They? Introverts are great.
Introverts.
Yes, of course.
I know. They really are.
I'm just hoping my husband's listening to that.
Well, but with conflict or with communication, it's a learned trait. So that means we can be more effective. And frankly, we can also learn, and we talk a lot about this in pre-marriage too, that when you have an opposite, for example, is your husband an extrovert?
Yes. Jeff?
Okay. So he's me and you're my wife.
Basically.
I had to learn to embrace Kathy's introversion. I loved it. I mean, the reason I married her was because I loved her introversion. I loved her deep thing. As soon as we got married, we'd be at a party and she'd have a significant conversation with one person and I would have a shallow conversation with everybody. And then I'd be mad that she didn't meet everybody. And all of a sudden I went, wait, that's an incredible thing. I talked to these people and I go, I had the best evening with Kathy. And I saw her sitting on a couch having this lovely conversation. And I'm, working the room. Well, I had to embrace that because that I didn't understand that. Well, if we can get people before marriage to embrace some of the differences, I call it designed to be different, and we call that in the book designed to be different, then if you embrace that early, it's going to cause less conflict when you do get married because you can embrace, the differences as opposed to, let the differences drive you crazy or drive a wedge in your relationship.
Mm. Well, and it's true. We will get in a car after we've been to some sort of a gathering and he'll say, who did you talk to? And I'll say, randomly, Jill. I talked to Jill. He's like, that's it? I talked to Jim and Sue and Bobby and blah, 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 blah. And it's just the most hilarious conversation. And now we, of course, appreciate it. We've been married for quite a long time. But it's true that if you learn a little bit about that person, you know that you can't change that person. But you can learn, why you love that person in the first place and what makes them special or unique. And it really does help.
You're exactly right. So you are. You're
God
exactly
made
right.
me to and have one conversation per party. That's
exactly.
What God made me to do.
Right. Well, if we go come to the Minneapolis area, I need to go hang out with your husband, and you can hang out with my wife, and you guys can talk deep, and he and I will have a great time, just talking about everything.
That would be wonderful. Well, you've been married for several years, a few more than I have. So tell our audience why marriage is worth the investment to make it work.
Oh my goodness! Yesterday, Kathy and I went out on our date night, and we've been doing date nights. And we tell people in getting ready for marriage to do this. We went out on our date night, and we went to a favorite place of ours to eat, which doesn't have you can have more creative dates than just that, but it was great. And we started looking back at the legacy of our life. You know, we call ourselves the transitional generation because we came from more of a non-Christian background. The Bible says you inherit the sins, or at least the sin bent, of three to four generations past. So our deal was to break that. Well, now we're talking about a grandson. We're talking about our girls who walk in faith. And we went, you know what? There's nothing better than this. Have we had moments that, you know, haven't been fun? Sure, we have. And we even say we have a high-maintenance marriage. But we know that if we practiced what we're talking about in getting ready for marriage and so many of the other things, that, you know, I wouldn't change it for anything. In fact, last night it was funny. I was the more emotional one, and I just grabbed her hand. We're right by the beach, and we're walking kind of by the beach, and I grabbed her hand and I just said, you know what? I am so grateful for you. And in that moment, there was this feels so good. And I'm so glad that we worked through our issues so that we could get to this point. Not that we don't still at times have discussions, deeper discussions that, you know, we disagree on. Mm. But, you know, it is so worth it. And, you know, I've grown in my faith because of Kathy. She is the most important influence in my life. To raise our three daughters and now a son-in-law that we're involved with, we love this man. We are so blessed, and now that we have a little James, who's 6 months, and you know this is our life. We feel really blessed because we stuck with it. Mm-hmm. And there are times, I'm telling you, at the beginning where we didn't have the good premarital education, and it was very confusing for us. What do we do?
Well, we're hoping that if you're considering getting married and listening today, that you're going to get a jump start on how to communicate and how to deal with conflict, just like we've been talking about with Jim Burns. He's written a great book called Getting Ready for Marriage, A Practical Roadmap for Your Journey Together. We do have a few of his books to give away and workbooks as well. So if you'd like to get that in your hands or get that in the hands of maybe a son or daughter who's considering getting married, give us a call at 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. Or you can just go to myfaithradio.com and click on Connecting Faith. You can certainly submit your name or a question that way. But we'd love to hear from you. I'm talking to Jim Burns today about getting ready for marriage. Welcome to Back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Thanks so much for having us, for listening to us today. I'm talking to author Jim Burns today. He's talking about his book, Getting Ready for Marriage, A Practical Roadmap to Your Journey Together. Jim also has his own radio show, and we'll have details on that on our website at myfaithradio.com if you'd like to hear more from him. And Jim, one of the things you write about in your book is intimacy. You write both about creating sexual intimacy, but also about creating a spiritual intimacy. Why is it important to create a spiritual intimacy as a couple?
Yeah. Well, you know, intimacy is an interesting word. I wrote a book called Creating an Intimate Marriage years ago, and the guys thought it was on sex, and women thought it was on connection. Women typically understand relationships better, and it is connection, of course. But, you know, I would say the least developed area for Christians is spiritual intimacy, meaning spiritual connection. And so what Doug and I have found is that when couples connect spiritually, you mentioned at the beginning of the broadcast that it's about a 50% divorce rate, and unfortunately, it's pretty close to that, 2.1 million marriages last year, and about half of those, just about half of that is divorces. I think there's 850 or 9, so it's not exactly 50%, but, you know, quite a bit. Not of those people, it's of, you know, I'm kind of given the just what last year's statistics were. Mm-hmm. However, Shanti Feldhahn and some others who have done some amazing studies are showing that if a couple is spiritually committed and spiritually intimate, even meaning that they just go to worship services together, it takes it down to about 25% or 35%. So, I mean, you're bringing, again, the average divorce rate way down. If couples pray together, there's a much better chance. And so what we do in that chapter is we challenge couples at an early time to develop spiritual intimacy. We're oftentimes so busy, and again, like I said, it's probably the least area of intimacy. I mean, we just neglect it, and I understand why, because you can be, you know, you're so busy. We're all busy and all these other things. But if you'll connect on it, you know, it really will be part of that thing in compatibility that brings intimacy or connectedness to you, and so we see that as a major factor, and it's something that I think we have to talk about to all premarital couples. What are you going to do to grow spiritually together?
And so could that be simply praying together, worshiping together, reading spiritual books together, things like that?
No. Sure, I think it's the basics. And if a couple doesn't feel comfortable praying out loud together, then, you know, grab hands, pray silently or whatever. But when couples pray together, there was a study done at Columbia University that was mind-blowing. And I get this from a man named Dr. David Stoop, who's kind of been a mentor in marriage to me. And this study that he looked at said that there is couples who pray together every day, there is a 1 out of 1,100 get a divorce. That's remarkable. Well, that just means that, you know, these are people who are probably more tied in, you know, spiritually. And again, I don't think it has to be long. I don't think people have to become, you know, people who every day, you know, pray for an hour and do all this. I just think it's on a regular basis. One of the things we challenge people to do is what we call the closer challenge. And it's actually kind of autobiographical with Kathy and me. We started spending 20 minutes a week. And I know that sounds spiritually you know, kind of wimpy to some of your people, but we'd pray together and we obviously had a ministry together, but we started doing this closer time. And when we did that, it really did help us build this foundation of spiritual connectedness. So we challenge young couples to do the same thing. We challenge them when they're engaged and in premarital to start something where they actually spend 20 minutes. They've got plenty of time. I mean, I know they're busy, but if they would just spend 20 minutes a week at the beginning, it would build that foundation together. Mm. In a book by my friends Gary and Barb Rosberg, the book was called 5 Sex Needs of Men and Women. The fourth sex need of a woman, they said, was spiritual intimacy. You know, it's not even on the top list for the guys, okay? But the woman craved that, and when she did, she felt even more physically intimate to her husband. Well, I think that that's a great reminder to young couples to start and build that foundation now. Don't wait until you're in desperation or until the kids come and you go, oh, we'll have more time then. No, you won't. You'll be busier than you are now. And so start now with building and being intentional about spiritual intimacy. Mm. Makes a difference.
You know, Jim, you mentioned that you have a person who kind of mentored you in some of your marriage concerns. How important is it for a young couple or a couple who's considering marriage to have a mentor couple to bring about issues that they may have not thought of before?
Yeah. Well, you know what? We would have a mentor for everything else. Why on earth? I mean, you know, if we wanted to get in shape or, you know, business-wise and all that, why on earth do we not do that? We tell every couple, and we say this in the book too, but we tell every couple, find mentors who are maybe older or wiser, they've had more experience, and, you know, be involved in that. I mean, we have done that within our life, Kathy and I. And again, because we couldn't look at our parents as much as mentors. They were mentors in certain ways, but not, you know, definitely spiritually or marriage-wise. And so we had to find people. And so we never went up to people and said, hey, will you be our mentors? We just started saying, hey, could we come over sometime? We'd love to talk to you about some issues, you know, in marriage and whatever. So these are not counselors. These are people who went to our church, by and large, who had been married for a while, and they knew their stuff. And the dialogue and the conversation was phenomenal. Now, you can have paper mentors. You can read a book, and that's a paper mentor. But that's not like having coffee with someone. And I've continued to do that. You know, just last week, one of my mentors was in town. They live in Utah. And so we had breakfast, and I had a list of 5 things. It turned into about 50, but I had a list of 5 things that I just wanted to talk to this man about. He's an incredibly God-honoring man who has helped me in many ways so much. He's a businessman. He doesn't know the ministry side to what I do, but he's a lovely, phenomenal Christian. He was the chairman of an elder board of a church I was involved in. And I just learned so much from him. So I find that when couples invest in mentors, it gives them security. It gives them insight, wisdom. But it takes time. But they've got to do it. I mean, if I was talking with the, you know, 2 folks who are within your radio team, I would say who are the people that you want to seek out as mentors? Now, again, you're not going to do that every week, but it's the kind of thing where even if you had a meal or coffee or something with them 4 times a year, what a boost. Mm. That's a phenomenal thing to do.
Well, and it's true. It does also make you feel a lot less lonely. Oh, someone else actually had that same kind of issue in their relationship.
Oh, yeah.
We're not alone.
Oh, You're right. This one couple that now they're in their 80s and they're actually not in as great a health. But Kathy and I laugh about an experience where we came in. We were really struggling. Our kids were all young and in diapers, and oh my gosh, it was a mess. And we just said, how did you guys manage at this time? Because they had three kids. And they started laughing, and they said, we didn't. We kind of don't even remember that stage. And we got no help whatsoever. You know, I think there was some help in sharing diaper privileges or some ridiculous thing, but it wasn't that much help. We walked out feeling so much better because these people laughed and just said, it's a phase. It's a terrible phase, and it's a beautiful phase. Enjoy the beauty and, you know that some of the terrible stuff's going to get out of it. They gave us no insight whatsoever, Joe, and it was fabulous because just they're laughing at us, saying, well, of course it's going to be crazy. You know, you're going to look back at it and laugh. So you're not now. Of course not. Well, you know what? That's something we still remember. And yet they didn't really even give us good ideas or 4 points in a poem. And they didn't quote any scripture. I mean, we've gotten that from them in other times, but not at that time. It was like, oh, yeah, it's a horrible stage.
Well, it's true. I did have a woman who had two children by the time I had one. And I used to call her all the time with just the silliest things to me. Yeah. I mean, they were monumental to me. And she would kind of go through what she did to conquer whatever that particular issue it was, whether potty training or feeding or whatever. And actually, she's the person I usually talk to at the parties for 2 hours. So, it was great to have her there, and you're right. If we just had another couple who we could say, what did you do when this occurred, or what did you do when this occurred, to know that there's someone in that journey with us, even though they're a little bit further down the road.
Right.
And it does really help us feel like we are not the only ones going through this crazy period, and it will come to an end.
Exactly. And in that, we also are – we're talking about, you know, admitting our own brokenness. We are also admitting that we don't have it together when we talk to these people. Mm. And that helps us too. So, you know, today my wife has become the mentor to my daughter when it comes to, you know, babies. And when my daughter, my oldest daughter, Christy, who's married, when she was 17, I didn't even know if they would like each other, you know, in adulthood. And, you know, I was listening in on a conversation today because our little James grandson has a 102 temperature and Kathy was walking her through it, and you know they had decided it was time to, you know, go to the pediatrician today, and you know all these different things. And I thought how beautiful it is that for some they can actually go to their parents, and their parents or their grandparents or, you know, even relatives can actually become partly their mentors in this. But you may not feel comfortable talking about it. You know, Christy and Steve are way too open to us. It's like, oh my gosh, you guys, do you need to really talk to us about that subject? I'm talking about the sex word. It's like, oh my gosh, that's my daughter we're having a conversation with. But at the same time, you know, we've turned to kind of being mentors, but also they need other mentors. Now, I couldn't have had those conversations with my parents. So I would have had to go out and find other mentors where I could have conversations that were, you know, a little bit making, you know, us where we just felt uncomfortable. My parents couldn't have done it. However, you know, we just have to, you know, who are those people that you can seek out? And every young couple, I make them write down three couples that they, you know, could think about. Now, I don't know that you need three mentors, but I make them write down. So Aaron and Chris, I want to know what their three couples' names are. What are the three couples that, you know, you might be able to spend some time with either before marriage or after marriage? And just simply ask questions. What you do with mentors is, you know, a lot of it's just asking questions. What did you guys do in this place? What did you guys do for holidays? What did you do? How did you, you know, have enough money to eventually buy a house? You know, those kinds of things. What did you do? How do you save? Well, I'm a saver. She's a spender. How did you guys, what are you guys? You know, and having all the important conversations, and, you know, we learn from people's experience.
Hmm. Well, Jim, we have just a little under a minute left, and I'd love for our listeners to hear more about what you do at Homeward and how they can find out more about you. Can you just give us a little update on that?
Yes. You know, Homeward has an incredible website, and one of the parts that they could get from our website is something called gettingreadyformarriage.com, and we have book, workbook, and we also have an online app that's incredible, and we build strong marriages. We help people with confident parents. We're the largest provider of parenting seminars in the country. And we empower kids and we help healthy leaders. That's what we do. And come to the website, take a look at it.
Well, we'll have a link to that. We'll have a link to that on our website as well at myfaithradio.com. Just go to Connecting Faith. You can find out more about Jim, more about Homeward, and more about getting ready for marriage. Jim, thanks for joining us today.
Great to be with you, Joe. God bless.
You too.